Blog Talk Radio.
Looking for inspiration to take action, to grow? Then you've arrived. The Coco Express has been waiting for you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's me, your host, Aurelia. And I have to say, I am so happy to be here. We're starting a new podcast, and it's called 60 Over 60. And I had this epiphany one day when I was sleeping, and I was like, you know what? When people start to turn 60, society looks at them one way, and they look at things from another direction, and it's all a mess, okay? So this is what I believe, okay, that once you reach a certain number in your life, things will never be the same, and they're not supposed to be the same. They're supposed to change, and why would you want things to remain the same? Because as you grow, evolve, develop, things change, your perception of life changes, your views change, the way you look at the world changes, nothing remains the same. So why would you believe that because your age progresses, that you are no longer viable, that something, you know, stops for you? It doesn't. And this is what this particular podcast is all about, celebrating those that people think have stopped because a certain number has popped up in their life. Well, we're going to learn something today, okay? Up next, we have the amazing Stuart Granger. Yep. People know him as Stu. He has an amazing story to share with each and every one of us. And guess what? His story is still ongoing. He is said to be one of the best point guards in Canadian senior men's national basketball history. He represented Canada at the 1982 and 1990 FIBA World Championships for men. He made history as the first Black Canadian to be drafted into the NBA when the Cleveland Cavaliers selected him 24th overall in the 1983 NBA draft. In the three seasons in the NBA, he appeared in 80 games for the Cavaliers, Atlanta Hawks, and the New York Knicks. Now, prior to the NBA, he spent 4 years at the University of Villanova, where he played 125 games for the Wildcats and was an All-Big East second team selected to back-to-back seasons. See, that's a huge accomplishment. That's a lot for somebody to experience. But we want to find out, what did it take? How did you get there? What were you looking at? And where are you now? And what is life like for you now? So I am honored, extremely honored, to have Mr. Granger on the show with us today. I call him Stu. So please take the opportunity to get to learn who he is.
Hello, good evening to everyone that's listening, and happy holidays to everyone and their families.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. We are appreciative of that warm welcome. So how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm still young, still able to spend time with my kids and my 6 grandkids.
Oh, wow.
And I'm trying to help educate them in some form or fashion.
I hear you. I hear you. You know, you have such an amazing, amazing, rich history. You have a wonderful story and a journey. You have, I'm putting it all out there, you have cleared the path, paved the way, and made it possible for so many others to come behind you and do what you do. How did it all start? And the big question is, was there ever another option other than basketball?
Okay, well, it started when I was young. My parents are from Trinidad, and they actually migrated and went to school in Canada. So that's when I was born in Canada. But we left there when I was like 4 or 5. We came to New York, and we was actually living in Brownsville with my other families that had a four family apartment. So we actually lived there. And when I was in Canada, I was actually playing hockey when I was young. And
no way.
Learning
no
French.
Way.
And, yes. And also because it was always, you know, cold and icy. So, you know, we just played hockey a little bit. But then when you came to United States, we started playing basketball.
Okay. So, interesting.
So that's how that started. And, you know, I'll end up playing for the middle school and junior high school at that time.
So,
and also my...
No, go ahead, please.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Also, Also, my cousin, he also played in college, so he was very influential in me, you know, playing, because I had to play against older guys, and they would beat me up. But he was like, yo, you got to take the punishment. So I just took the punishment. And also when I was out there, I learned from everyone. So when I seen something that I liked, I used to come to the park around 6, 7 o'clock in the morning time and work on what I had to do. You know, I had to put that time in. So in the afternoon, I was able to then demonstrate what I actually learned and practice.
Okay, great. That is amazing. You know, these things that I learned, I'm learning a lot right now. So you played hockey, and when you transitioned to, well, when in Canada, you played hockey. When you came to the United States, Brooklyn, you played basketball. And what was that like? I mean, you were only 4 years old, so you really wouldn't have any solid recollection of making that transition. But while you were on the basketball court, what were your thoughts? What were you thinking? Are you just playing because you liked the game and it was something you loved? Did you think that you saw a future at that time?
Well, at the time, I was like everybody was playing, so I just decided to start playing because I was very, very fast and quick. And let me tell you a story how I became so fast and quick. We lived on Saratoga in Brownsville. We went to school at 183, which was around the corner. So at that time, they were like, oh, y'all are coconuts. Get those coconuts. So basically, you know, in the classroom, remember they had the clock that it don't work anymore, but back then it used to work. So when it got like 250, 255, I was already packed up and ready to run out the door. So the whole entire school was actually chasing my brother and my cousins back home every single day. Every time we came out, because you remember the train station right there. So we go to the store. They come out the store. They see us. We got to run around the corner. Every time we kept running. So, you know, I think they caught my cousin. They never caught me, so I was so fast. So I would like to thank them for all they did for me when I was younger to make me a very fast individual at the time.
Oh, that's cool.
But as time went on, you know, they actually embraced us, and we started playing basketball. So I was still, like, in the early stage, you know, trying to just play and learn the games.
Okay. Now, I know that basketball was something that you learned and you played, but what about academics? How important was that to you?
Okay, now we're going to talk about the 3 B's, and I don't want nobody to be offended by it, but in my household, my father was always about books, because if my books wasn't correct, I can't play basketball. So I came up with books, basketball, and babes. That's the 3 B's. You don't never put your girl in front of your basketball or your schoolwork. You never put basketball, in front of your book. So I was all about education first, sports, and then, girls always came last.
Okay. Now, you made it through junior high school, and then you wound up in high school. In high school, you played for, was it Nazareth? And how was that? What was that like?
That was a different experience because it was a Catholic school, and it was predominantly white, which, I have, no issues with that. However, we was all supposed to go to Tilden High School. Because I don't know if you can recall, in junior high school, they used to have basketball. So after the eighth grade, they got rid of that. And I was so lucky that this coach, which was two police officers, had us play. It was Bo, Artie, and myself. And, we was the only, Afro-Americans on the team. And we had some other white players. So we was always playing together. We was always winning. Then all of a sudden, we had Kareem. Remember Kareem that played with the Lakers? We had him, and we had this other guy. So we had a great team. And we played in McDonald's Classics. We beat everybody like 30, 40 points. And we were cadets. And when we played titles, which, older, we used to beat them by 30 and 40.
Hmm.
So that particular coach was supposed to get the job to Tilden, but they gave it to somebody else. So what he did was he had us play against Nazareth, and Nazareth ended up giving us a scholarship.
Oh, cool.
Because he didn't want us to go to Tilden, yeah. So then everybody split up. But if we were all together, Tilden High School would have been, we had a great team, but we all split up.
Okay.
But when I did get that scholarship, now, I had to do some work because in public school, passing was 65. In Catholic school, it's 70. That 5 points make a big difference. It makes a big difference.
Kind of interesting. So I would like to ask, we're gonna come back to this, but I wanted to ask, where are your friends now? Did they make it into the NBA? Did they, what happened to your year?
I had a few people that made it into the NBA. And also they played overseas. John Pannone, Ed Pickney, Dwayne McClain, Rory Sparrow.
Okay. So, now, you went to high school. When you got into high school, obviously, you were a stellar athlete, and it came time to go to college. When you were making decisions to go to college, what was the focus? What was your main focus when choosing a college to go to? Was it based on sports, or was it based on academics?
It was based on sports. And also, people have to realize, I hope they realize, you got to find out who's there, who's leaving, and, you have to have trust in the coach and assistant coach. So there's one school, I don't know if I should mention it, but I was thinking about going to Syracuse, and at the time they told me they had Eddie Morse, and they told me, I think Eddie was a sophomore, so if I would have came in, I would have been a freshman. He would have been a junior. Okay, so he said, "Oh, you could take Eddie. You could take Eddie's spot because he's doing this." So I said, "Okay." I just listened. Then I decided. I said, "That's just people just lying to me. I didn't believe in it." So when I went to Villanova, it was only Rory Sparrow, and the coach said, "Next year, it's your job, and you keep your job." So I learned under Rory Sparrow, because he also played in the pros, and he told me, don't you never, ever, ever let nobody take your spot once you get the spot. So anybody that I recruited, I told him, you could come, but it's going to be a war every day, and if you think about starting, you'll never start. So I felt more comfortable being at Villanova than at Syracuse.
Okay.
And to make a long story short, I remember playing against Syracuse, and Eddie Moss is still starting on the team. And I've played against him for 2 years, and he's still on the team playing. So what does that tell you?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we have made it to college. What was your thought process? Were you thinking, I'm so good, I think I'm going to go pro? Or were you thinking, you know what, let's just see how this goes and let me take it as it comes?
In basic, I never thought about pros. I thought about just actually fitting in, you know, because first year I had to just, you know, learn this game, you know, learn college. Because high school and college is totally different. And I know one pack that I told Rory Sparrow, his freshman, when he was leaving, I said, Rory, I'm going to break your assist record. You know, and then I was like, that I'm going to do before I leave Villanova. And come to find out, I did break his record. You know, and after when I was a sophomore, then I became a leader. So, and also with me and John Pannone being there. But just remember, John Pannone already been starting, and I was the newcomer. But I was able to adjust well, you know, really well because of my training process and, you know, me actually listening and understanding what Coach Massimino needed me to do.
It's interesting you would mention that when you say your training process. What would that consist of?
Basically, you know, eating right, one, and two, you know, taking practices serious. You know, if I have to stay a little bit longer, which I really could because you have to run back to eat afterwards. But I make sure that, you know, I do my stretchings and doing all that stuff. And also I have to hit the books too. So I made sure that I did a little something before I went to bed or, you know, just to keep up.
Okay. Now, you've made it through college and now it's that time and the NBA is looking at you. What was your mind, you know, where was your head at? What were you thinking? What was your mindset like? What was your family saying and thinking?
Well, everybody's saying that, you know, I was going to get drafted, but I actually went to, I did a visit with Milwaukee, right? And that's the one place I really wanted to actually, you know, have them draft me. So they said that they was going to draft a big guy or myself. So during the draft time, when it came to the 17th pick, I was like, it's got to be me because I felt more comfortable being with the Milwaukee Bucks at the time because they were already established and they was doing something. And plus, you know, I could actually learn more about the game, you know, being around Quinn Buckner because he was the point guard at the time. And we kind of built the same. So I really wanted to be drafted by Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay. But that didn't happen. So what was on your mind? What was on your mind when you saw that kind of slip away?
Well, basically, we were all in Madison Square Garden, and everybody around me is gone. I was the last person and the last pick. So I was very, very grateful that the Cavaliers did draft me times.
Now, what do you think? It didn't happen, so it would be very hard for you to try to make that kind of make that statement. But what do you think would have happened had you not have been drafted?
That's a good question.
I come up with good ones every now and again.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's why I always say books, basketball, and baseball, because if basketball wasn't there for me, then I would then have to go out there and work harder to go get a good, you know, to go get a good job.
Mm-hmm. And what was your major in college?
It was economics and sociology.
Oh, okay. Okay, and what other, I'm asking this to see what were your other options? What would you have considered if basketball wasn't an option?
Wow, that's a good question too. Maybe working with family or possibly even being a lawyer.
Okay, interesting. That's very interesting. Now, here you are. Now you're with the NBA, the National Basketball Association, known worldwide, has some of the most amazing talent ever seen. You know, everything's televised, everything's there. How was that for you, making that transition from playing college ball to playing professional ball? And what, you know, how did you prepare yourself and how did you maintain yourself while you were there?
Well, during time playing was great and, you know, meeting other people, whatever. But the one part that I think me and you spoke about it, I hope this is not a negative thing, you know, jealousy and envy, and you really didn't know who your friends were. That's the tough part. That's the tough part where I had to sit with my mother. And I'd be like, Mom, I'm no better than them just because I'm playing in. I'm just Stu, you know what I'm saying? And I wanted people to look at me in that manner, you
mm-hmm.
know? And I didn't want nobody because, you know, you have a lot of friends that say, oh, yo, you played a good game. And then later on they talk bad about you, you know, and that hurts. You know, that really hurts.
Now,
yeah, that's,
how,
that's
I
the
mean,
part that,
go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry for cutting you off, but that's the part where, you know, me and my mother, you know, me and my mother was very, very close. She's my number one woman, and no other woman could take her spot. And she actually guided me and, you know, through all this stuff, you know. She was the only one I could actually depend on. And
okay.
She told me how to deal with that and how to handle, you know, certain situations.
Well, it's good you had that that force, I'll say, in your life, and someone to really keep you going straight and keep your head on your shoulders.
Yeah, grounded too. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Keep you grounded.
So the question is, aside from the friends outside, what about your teammates? How was your relationship with your teammates?
Teammates were great. I didn't have no issues with them. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember playing, you know, with Michael in Chicago and, you know, other players, even Magic Johnson, you know, and even Julius Erving.
Oh, that's
know?
Cool.
He was beautiful, too. Yeah, he was good, too. A lot of them was great.
Okay,
you know, and
excellent.
I had World Be Free, Jeff Houston, you know, a lot of great players I had.
Great. Now, when you were traded from one team to the next, how do you handle that? How does that process work? Did it change your mindset in any way, shape, or form? Were you sad to leave? Were you happy? What were your emotions?
Yes, I was very sad to leave because you know why? I wanted to you know make something you know where I was at in Cleveland, but my thing here is that. You have to understand, this is a business. And you could be, you know, everybody talk about, why did LeBron, everybody hook up and do this? Well, my thing here is, why do teams trade players when they don't want to be traded? If it's an open thing, then everybody could do whatever they want to. You know,
okay.
You know, as long as it's, you know, it's according to their contract. So I don't feel no way if you want to have four superstars and you could afford them, then fine. Because you got players out there that don't want to be traded. You know, just like, Holiday. He didn't want to leave Milwaukee. But now he's on Boston. So that's a good example. He didn't want to leave, you know, Milwaukee, but Milwaukee traded him. And he won a championship, so I know for sure it's just a business. It's only a business.
Okay, so having to uproot yourself and go to another city or another state, is that difficult? I mean, we all do it in some shape or form, but is that difficult? Was it difficult for you?
Oh, yes, it is, because one, you can't really say, okay, they're going to keep me here. Let me get a house here. Don't make no sense. You might as well stay in an apartment, a townhouse, so then you could travel just in case if they trade you again, because you could be traded 3-4 times in a year. You could be traded whatever. You know, you never know. So there's no real consistency, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, also, you went to the New York Knicks, which is interesting because that was where you sat when you got drafted. What was it like being at home?
Oh, I loved it because I was home and I wanted, you know, to actually learn again because every system is different and I just really wanted to be part of it. But there's a lot of pressure coming home and playing too, so
What was that like? Because I know you were playing, I think it was Patrick Ewing was on the team at the time.
Right, Patrick, Rory Sparrow,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
Dominique's brother, Kenny Walker. I liked that team. It was a good team. But we just wasn't just winning.
Mm. So what was the pressure being at home? I mean, what was that really like for you personally?
Well, you got family and friends coming to the game. They want to watch the game, especially they want to see what's going on. You know, sometimes I played, sometimes I didn't, you know. But I never let none of that frustrate me. I was always ready when they called.
Okay, and when that ended, where did you go next?
After that, I went overseas.
Okay, and what was that like? First, you're here in the United States, and then you go overseas. How was that transition? How were you able to make that adjustment? And was it an easy transition? Was it a difficult transition? Did you have to, what country were you in, and what languages did you need to understand?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. After that, you know something? I did play in the CBA.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm sorry, I played in the CBA and the USBL, so I made first team. Then I decided, okay, they called me to go overseas, and that was pretty good because I went over to Sweden. I went to Philippines and other couple countries. Yeah, that was good. I loved it just being out there.
Okay.
It's a different experience.
And, I mean, how was it different? Did you feel freer? Do you feel more comfortable being you? Or, what was the difference?
Oh, yeah, you have to make the adjustments, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, they kind of cater to you. You know, I remember having a chauffeur. I had a boy. I had a girl. I had another woman that cooked. So we really didn't have to do much.
Oh, okay.
You know?
That's, mm-hmm.
And then when I went to Sweden, I remember they gave me a Saab. They gave me, I don't even know how to drive a stick, and the wheel was on the other side. Oh, boy. So they ended up giving me an automatic so I could drive around.
Oh, that was cool. So, having said all that, were you homesick while you were away in another country? Did you miss the U.S. or were you just like, this is cool, I could deal with this until?
No, I just made adjustments. You know, it was basketball. I was having fun. You know, we'd go to different cities and it was nice. I liked it.
Okay. And then when that stopped, when you stopped playing European ball, what did you do and why did you make that? What decisions did you make? What factored into the decisions that you made?
Yeah, I was going to continue playing. Decided to say, you know something, let me start getting myself together. Let me don't keep playing so much and make a change. So I said, let me just start working with the kids, you know, just to try to help them out. So I actually worked at Jewish childcare for like 6 years. And that was good. And then I decided, then I went from there to the Department of Probation, working with juveniles.
Wow. Wow.
And I did that for 24 years.
Wow. Now, all of this basketball world and Stuart Granger, what was your family life like? I mean, it must have been, you know, hard if you were moving around a lot. And when did you decide to settle down, and how did all of that factor into your life?
Right. So that was the first job when I worked at JCCA, because I worked there like 4 days and they gave you 3 days off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I had my son, and I decided, whoa, you know, they were getting bigger, but they see me, and I decided, you know something? Let me just make a change so I can get regular hours, and because they needed my attention too. But also the kids that I was working with, they were kind of upset with me when I left, but they understood that I had to go take care of my kids because I used to bring my kids down there. You know,
mm-hmm.
I wanted them to see how other people live, you know,
mm-hmm.
in a residential. So, you know, the kids was like, "Crazy, I know you got to leave. Go, make sure you take care of them." So I know these kids needed love and attention. So I said, my own kids need love and attention too. So I decided, let me make a change.
Mm. That is just really interesting. And what was it like when you got the announcement that you were going to be inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame? Did that come as a surprise? How did you feel?
Yes, because it's been a long time, you know, and there was some politics behind that. And it was basically the people that were running, and it was only putting certain people in. No disrespect. It was a lot of prejudice. But however, what happened was you got some good people that, you know, was overlooking the whole program, and they came up and said, excuse me, why isn't Stuart Granger in there? And if he's not in there, guess what? We're going to start getting some lawsuits and all of this stuff and paperwork. And you kind of know the person, but I don't want to put his name out there, but maybe I could. It's, you know, his father, his son plays for the Knicks. Okay, I don't want to put no names. His father plays, his son plays for the Knicks, and he was in charge, and, you know, and he was going to get a big lawsuit, and they was like, but how come no African-Americans are not in there? And why? Y'all need stats? Okay. So when it came up, we overlooked this. Oh, I'm sorry. Next thing you know, they called me. And it was one of my, you know, good friends that was on my team. And he was also my roommate. And he was also part of the board. And he called me and said, it was too bad. It's a low. I don't know what the hell went wrong. And we don't know, but you're going in. And also Leo Routens was part of it too, and he said, what's going on? How come Granger's not in there? Come on. First African-American, point guard, ran the show, and why he's not in? Look at his stats. 20 points a game, you know, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. He led the team in scoring and assists, and why he's not in there?
So, that is interesting.
Yes. Yes.
So your time had come, and it must have felt great, you know, to finally be acknowledged for all the hard work that you put in and the journey that you had taken to get to where you were.
Oh, yes, of course.
How did that
feel? Because when I went to the ceremony, I'm sorry, when I went to the ceremony, you know, I seen a lot of old friends, and I seen, I don't know if you know the guy in Toronto, the Arab guy. That has he's always at the games. I took pictures with him because he's like, oh, great, I haven't seen you in a long time. You were a great player. So I was able to see a lot of people, and there was a lot of other people that said, wow, you know, Granger, we've been hearing about you and watching you and doing all that stuff, and to be the first African-American to run a basketball team, because that has never occurred, never in your life. And you're the first one, and we look up to you. So I felt, you know, I felt very happy that, you know, and they acknowledged me on that too. So that's not now. You see a lot of African-Americans, you know, point guards are running, they're running the show in Canada.
Cool. You paved the way for them to be able to have that opportunity. And I guess that feels great.
Yes. Yes.
To know that you
That's
started
it.
That.
Yes.
Now, I want to go back to one thing. Your decision to go into working with kids, did it have anything to do with the police officer that assisted you when you were younger?
Somewhat, because I didn't want to be a police officer, and I wanted to try to give back. So I decided, you know something, let me do the juvenile, you know, let me do the juvenile. So they had me working, they wanted me to work in the field service unit, because they really wanted me real bad. But then they had a program for kids. So I said, you know something, let me take the program for kids. You know, so when I start working with them, the first thing I would tell them, please, do not respect me because I have a badge and gun. I could lock you up. Me for the person that I am, that I'm going to help you get through this stuff, you know, get to whatever. And a lot of the kids really respected me for that, because I worked all the way from Lower East Side all the way to Washington Heights. I had the whole entire Manhattan.
Mm. Now,
you know, and going through all these projects and meeting a lot of people, going through people's homes, and the family respect me. And I always gave them my word.
Wow. Now, the question is, do you miss playing basketball at all?
Somewhat. Because I did have an injury that I was playing on the hospital team, and I tore my ligaments in my left knee. But when that got better, I was still playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but all the rah-rah and all the excitement, yes, I do miss that. Yep, I do miss it.
So now your rah-rah and excitement is with your grandchildren. How many you have?
Six
grandchildren, and yeah. And are any of them involved in sports?
Oh yes, they want to play. Well, I had them this summer for almost a month, and I had them playing in the park in the basketball a little tournament just to do just drills and stuff or whatever. But they live in Atlanta, Georgia, so you know they love football. So that's what they're going to turn to. They're going to be football players.
Okay.
And they enjoy the game. They actually, you know, get on their phones, get people's stats. They can tell you anything about football. They always into it. So I think they're going to be football players.
Okay. That's cool. And you can take those same drills that you learned when you were, you know, with basketball, and you can incorporate that into drills for them to be able to be quick on the field as well.
And that's exactly what I did. I took them in the parks in the morning time, and they did, you know, they did all the drills and, you know, sprints and running around the track. They did all that. So they always call me to get, you know, feedback.
Okay.
However, I'm the one that tell them, listen, I can only tell you to do A, B, C, but that's up to you. I'm not going to force you. If you don't do it, then you don't do it. But it'll be in your best interest. So you'll always stay ahead of the game.
Cool. Now, what's next? What's next for you? I mean, what is it that you want to do next?
I guess enjoy life and spend time with my grandkids.
Okay.
you know, try to, you know, engage them in certain things, because I tell them about books, basketball, and babe. So I guess one girl was trying to talk to him. He said, "Baby, I ain't got no time. I got my books, my football, and I can't re-mess with you at this time." So I was like, wow, he's listening. You know? Oh, boy, I tell you.
So
I got to be careful.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I got to be careful what I say to these young kids, you know?
Yes. But. Yes, because they take it seriously, you know?
Yes.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you, okay, it's two questions. If you could go back and tell your young self, based on what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
Wow. Question. And I hate to look back and then do this, but what I do is more training, more discipline.
Okay.
You know, can't spend that free time just doing, you know, negative. If I had to do it all, I would stay away from New York, because that's where you're from. If you go to another state and, you know, you just work out, it's a better situation. It's hard when you come back because people want to see you. They want you to do this, you know, and you have to stay focused.
The next question is, you go ahead and you finish that, because I want to make sure we get that.
Okay.
Okay.
No, it's okay.
The next question is, what advice would you give to someone who is looking to have the life that you lived, going to the NBA, traveling the world? What advice would you give them?
First things first, education is a must. Okay? You got to get that degree, because no one can never take your degree away from you, but they could take your sports activities that you're playing from you. You know what I'm saying? So if you want to play in the pros, you can't play in the pros. They could take that away from you, but that education can't take that from you. Cannot take it from you.
And
education is a must.
And I wanted to know, would you recommend that if you're going to get into major professional basketball, football, whatever the case may be, that you should take some kind of money management courses?
Of course. You know, if you're going to be a great player and you're working on your craft, that's part of your craft. You got to know where your money going. You know, you got to be the one that say, yes, I want this investment, or somebody just tell you, oh, it's a great investment. You don't know if it's great or not. You got to do your homework.
Okay.
You know, money's coming, money's going, yes.
Okay.
Money coming, money going, you spend it, you're doing all this stuff, and next thing you know, you lost everything.
And what about friends? You know, how important is it is to have friends? How important it is to have the right friends?
I'll tell you a quick story. I remember being on this team. I can't tell you who the person is, but, we play the game the night before, whatever. We leave out early in the morning. So somebody ran over and tried to say, hey, can we have your autograph? No, get out of here. So I was like, why would you do that? You know what I'm saying? Why would you do that? It's so crazy. But now I look back and say, okay, he could have did it or whatever. But you got to be careful who you give giving autographs to sometimes. You got to it's so difficult. You know, you might be doing something and it turns out to be wrong. You take a picture with somebody. Now, but just remember, it's a different society. You take a picture, then all of a sudden they turn that picture around and they do all kind of stuff. So, you know, a lot of players get very nervous. They don't want to touch nobody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough now. It's tough.
Mm-hmm. So you have to really, your circle of friends should be tight, and they should be friends that you can trust, is what you're saying?
Well, okay, I didn't really talk about the friend part. You got to be careful, because some of them could be your friend only when you do good, and when you do it bad, they all leave you.
Okay.
You got that big entourage, and then next thing you know, you broke. Ain't nowhere to be found.
Okay.
Nowhere to be found. And they, you know what I'm saying? So the ones that know that you're broken, they stick with you for this, and no, I'm going to stick with you, you know, and they kind of help you up, and then all of a sudden you build yourself up. Make sure you take care of that guy because he's been there with you.
Mm-hmm. I watched Fat Joe.
Remember when Fat Joe said he was doing well, he had entourage, and then he lost his money. All his friends, like, disappeared. He had to start all over again, you know? And it's hard because when you start and go, come back, and people keep coming back and forth, those are not really your friends. Those are not your friends. And it's very difficult because then you have, you know, envy and jealousy. That plays, you know, that comes in there too. So, you know, you think your friend is your friend, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's doing things to hurt you, and you can't even see it. So it's hard with friends.
Okay. So we're coming close to the end of the show, but I wanted to do like a little recap based on the conversation we've had. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying pretty much is if you find something that you really enjoy doing, do it to your best ability. Stay focused. Learn your craft. Learn it from the insides and out. Be able to change when change happens. So let's see, what else is it that I've learned from your story? And don't be afraid to be your best person and be the best team member that you can be. And lastly, just love yourself and believe in your abilities.
What you said is correct. Always got to love yourself.
Okay. And this is what I've learned from our conversation right now. And I just want to, you know, say thank you for taking the time to sit with us and share your story. Thank you for providing some really important life lessons. And because you never know, somebody could be out there just getting ready to take the step that you already took. And you have helped them make better decisions. And that's important. And on top of that, you are a happy grandfather, and what better reward than that?
Of course. But you know, mm-hmm. some still learning, just remember, always learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We never have all the answers. Every day is a learning process, you know? People got to understand, they don't know everything. People say, oh, I know this. You don't know everything. Every day is a learning. Regardless, if you're 60, 70, you know what I'm saying? So every day you have to learn something.
Okay. And I just want to say thank you for, you know, sharing time, sharing your stories, you know, just being honest and open about your journey. And it's a very interesting one, and it's an amazing one. So with that, I'm going to say I hope that if you ever want to come back and talk real basketball, you're more than welcome. I enjoyed our time together, and I'm going to say on behalf of my listeners, thank you, thank you, thank you again.
Yep, you're the hostess with the mostest. You know, I'll do anything for you. And for all the listeners, thank you for listening, and happy holidays.
You got it, everyone. So I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to still continue to talk to my listeners because there's something I want to share with them. So you're welcome to just, you know, sit and listen.
Okay.
Thanks for spending time with us.
come back now, yeah?